It's cold, and forecasters say temperatures could hit record lows in Butte, Bozeman, and Billings before this cold snap is over. But our top stories tonight are those of Montana veterans. I'm Eric Whitney, and this is Montana Evening Edition.
And I'm Christopher Allen. We'll drop in on Missoula's Veterans Day ceremony and hear from Montanans who've served after some headlines from the Associated Press.
Forecasters say a cold blast from Canada could drive temperatures down to record-breaking levels in parts of Montana. National Weather Service forecaster Dan Borsum says the mercury could plunge to 10 below zero on Wednesday morning in Billings. That would rival a record set in 1986. A low of 22 below zero was forecast in Butte and 17 below in Bozeman. That's a sharp change from temperatures that reached the upper 60s across parts of Montana over the weekend. Behind the sudden temperature drop is an exceptionally strong high-pressure system pumping in cold air from Canada. That system will linger for several days, and Borsum says temperatures will stay well below freezing into the weekend. Snowfalls of 2 to 10 inches were recorded Monday and Tuesday. The next chance for significant snow is on Friday.
Authorities charged a 25-year-old Kalispell man with punching the Whitefish police chief and breaking his nose on Halloween night. Caleb Buzzle was already on probation after pleading no contest to assaulting a Flathead County Sheriff's deputy in September 2013. Chief Bill Dial says he responded to a report of an intoxicated man stumbling in the middle of the street and yelling at passing cars and pedestrians. Dial said he asked Buzzle if he needed a ride home, and Buzzle became belligerent and punched him. Passersby saw what happened and held Buzzle until the other officers arrived. Buzzle was given a 6-year deferred sentence in May for assaulting a deputy and drug possession. Buzzle is charged with felony assault on a peace officer. He's jailed in Kalispell, and his arraignment is set for November 13th.
On this Veterans Day, we have the stories of several Montanans who've served. For Missoulian Bob Ferris, every day is Veterans Day. Ferris was stationed with the 1st Battalion 9th Marines during the Vietnam War. That particular battalion sustained heavy casualties. 749 men were killed in action, and two went missing in action during its Vietnam service. Ferris attended today's annual Forgotten Warriors Post 101 Veterans Day ceremony.
Well, it's Veterans Day. I mean, you wouldn't let snow and ice and anything else keep you from being down here. Yeah, it was very important.
Ferris says nothing beats the camaraderie of a day dedicated to honor men and women who've served in the armed forces.
It's so important that just to see all these old guys down here sharing stories they don't share with most people. It was amazing to hear some of the guys talking.
Jerry Christensen served in the Army for 25 years. Christensen is commander of the American Legion of Montana, District 5. To Christensen, Veterans Day is more than simply a federal holiday.
It's a day of remembrance. You know, you remember those you served with. Some of the people didn't make it home. You know, remember our fellow citizens and soldiers that are serving right now. For instance, there's an MP unit in Bozeman, Montana. It's on active duty over in Afghanistan right now. A lot of people don't even realize that.
The theme of today's ceremony in Missoula was, every war has its beginning, but does it ever really end?
Oftentimes have a lot of traumatic experiences from the war. You never forget your military service. You know, if you're a veteran, you just don't forget it. And you know, you remember it a lot of times like it was yesterday. And a lot of people that have disabilities, injuries, post-traumatic stress disorder from their service, it's an ongoing, ongoing thing.
Christensen says he hopes the Veterans Administration healthcare system gets the reforms he says it so desperately needs. About 80 people turned out for today's Veterans Day ceremony in Missoula. The bitter cold temperatures prompted organizers to stage the event inside the Missoula County Courthouse, the first time that's been done in recent memory. It's usually held by the Doughboy statue on the courthouse lawn. We now have the stories of three Montana veterans of more recent conflicts. They told them to journalism students at the University of Montana. These stories are part of a longer oral histories. That have been filed with the Library of Congress and in the Mansfield Library here in Missoula. First, in a piece produced by Christopher Allen and Sergio Gonzalez, Michael Warner talks about his service with the Marines from 2002 to 2008. He deployed to Iraq from 2003 to the end of 2005. His tank unit cleared up a large number of towns and cities, including Fallujah.
My name is Mike Warner. I served in the United States Marine Corps. I was with Bravo Company 2nd Tanks out of Lejeune for my initial deployment to Iraq. I have no living family. I was born in Houston, Texas, I should start. Spent most of my childhood in West Virginia with my grandparents until they passed away. I graduated high school from Corvallis, Montana. I had my 18th birthday in basic and my 21st birthday in Iraq. I didn't go for political reasons. I wasn't there fighting for freedom, in my opinion. I wasn't there fighting for democracy. I was there fighting for my family around me. I was there fighting for my tank crew. That's all that mattered to me. It's almost pick a fight with the tank, they're asking to die. My buddy, he always refers to me as the Grim Reaper of Death. We leveled everything from buildings to cars. Tanks aren't pretty. They're not meant to do pretty things. When a tank rolls into the battlefield, we are there to destroy things. That's our job. We were clearing Karma. I have no idea where we were at in Karma, to be honest with you. And these two little kids started poking their head up over the wall at me. They waved at me and I waved back. And then they came out with a whiteboard, like a marker whiteboard. First, they wrote a couple things in Arabic. And then they started writing in English. And it was stupid stuff like hello, or and they misspelled hello. I think the funny one that I still laugh about is, do you like Michael Jackson? They asked me if we had any food. And so I grabbed these two shamaris that we weren't going to eat. And I hopped off the tank and ran to the door of this building. This woman opens the door and I see the two kids. And I hand them these MREs. When I ran back to my tank, the two children, their parents had been killed by insurgents in Baghdad, and the woman that opened the door was their aunt. That small gift of kindness, just handing them two armies and talking to them, they became informants. And so, yeah, I don't know how many lives were saved from just handing them two armies. I mean, I could open that door and there could have been a suicide bomber or someone holding a rifle there. I'm not going to shoot on women and children. You can take 5 seconds to identify if that person has a rifle, if they're a woman or a child. It saves lives, innocent lives. Yes, there are situations, even in my military history, I shot women and children. I'm sorry. It happens. It's a war zone. How do you explain 2 years of your life that you really, that no one can really relate to? Like, we train people in society through societal norms to not kill people, to not hurt people, to be kind to each other. And then we take 1% of our population and we train them to hurt people very badly, to kill people. And you expect these people to come back home and just literally flip a light switch and be okay? No, it doesn't happen like that. And you sit there in a room with the counselors and, well, how does that make you feel? What did you feel? A recoil of my rifle. What do you think?
Our next story is Michaela Steiner's. She served in Iraq from 2010 to 2011 in an infantry battalion. Steiner worked as a driver and a gunner. After completing around 45 different missions, she came home to Montana and worked as a training sergeant in Helena.
Hi, my name is Michaela Steiner, and I deployed with Echo Company of the 145th, attached to the 163rd Infantry Battalion, and I was a specialist when I deployed to Iraq, and now I am in training center in Helena as a sergeant. Well, I was born in Bellingham, Washington, but I grew up in Belt, Montana, a little small town outside of Great Falls. When I was in high school, I was trying to figure out ways that I could pay for college because I still want to be a teacher, a college or a high school science teacher. So I was trying to figure out ways to pay for it, and my brother had been talking about joining the military for a really long time. So I started to read about it, and one day at the dinner table, I was like, hey, Mom and Dad, I want to join the Army. They're like, oh, okay. So for my basic training, I went to Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, and they call it Fort Lost in the Woods for a reason. And originally, in my contract, it said that I had a 2-year waiver because it was for school. Like, so I got a waiver saying for the first 2 years of my contract, I was non-deployable. And then as people were talking about it, all the people in my company and my battalion were talking about the deployment, I kind of like came to the realization that I needed to go with them. It wasn't, you're going, it's, well, they're going and you could go with them if you want to. So the next day I went and I waived that part of my contract. For the deployment, we had to do the training here, and then we went to Missouri, and we did some training in Missouri, and then we were finally able to get on a commercial flight from Missouri, and it hopped up to Maine, and then from Maine we went to Kuwait, and then from Kuwait we went into Iraq. So it was a very long, long airplane ride. It's kind of like the calm before the storm. And that's like your first taste of sand. So when all of us got there, we were all just like, okay, we're here. It was kind of like a relief to know that all that training we had done, we could finally do our jobs now. It wasn't scary unless we were on like Kalsu, which is a very, very small post. And the rockets can pretty much go over the entire post. There was one time where we were on a mission and we had stopped in Kelsu. They started to do the rocket firing and the scattering fire of the weapons, and it came really, really close to where we were sleeping. So it's very, like, startling to hear something explode. It's kind of like in the movies where you see, like, the car flip over and all that kind of stuff, except it was dirt and, like, cement just kind of, like, flying everywhere. So at that point, you just kind of run as fast as you can into the bunker and stay there. When we got back from Kuwait and Iraq, it's like that flip of the switch, you know, where you have to go from military, military, military to all of a sudden civilian, and you get to deal with these people who have no idea about military life. And when people look at me, they don't see soldier. They just see a girl, which I thought was kind of interesting because I had had this huge life experience and no one saw that.
Our last veteran story today was produced by Austin Shemp and Carl Schneider. They talked to Miles Netzer, who was a Marine from June of 2002 to July 2011. He deployed several times to locations around the world, working on air-to-air refueling planes.
Miles Netzer. I was born in Wolf Point, Montana, and I served in the United States Marine Corps. I was born in eastern Montana before anything big really happened out that direction, so town of 5,000 people, kind of slow. I did a lot of outdoor activities and enjoyed life on the farm. Well, the Marine Corps was kind of a late decision. For years, I had pretty much decided that I was going into the military of some sort. I decided to sign the papers, let's see, I think it was July 2nd, after my junior year. So it was the first time I ever flew on an airplane. They drove me all the way from eastern Montana to the western side of the state in Butte, ran me through MEPS, which is like your physical, and sign all your paperwork, and you basically sign your papers committing to the Marine Corps. So I had signed up knowing that I was going to be aircrew. I was going to be on some sort of airplane, helicopter. For me, aviation always kind of seemed like it was something that I was interested in, although I'd only flown the one time that the government paid for it. But it kind of always drew me in, like that was something that I wanted to do. As aircrew, they really want you to operate as an individual. The easiest answer for a crew chief is you are the aircraft system specialist. Everybody that's flown on C-130s as a crew chief will tell you, it was one of the best jobs in the Marine Corps. The job itself, I mean, we had our little fingers in all parts of the Marine Corps. You know, we were helping, you know, aerial delivery to guys on the ground, gas to jets in the air, hauling cargo back and forth. I can't tell you how many countries. I had to keep a list of how many countries I've been, actual countries I've been to. Iceland, I've been. Canada doesn't seem that exotic when you're sitting in Montana, but I've been to a few places in Canada. I've been to Alaska, you know. I've been to Africa. I've been in the Middle East. I've been to Japan, throughout Europe. I mean, you just, when the list starts getting that big and you start thinking about what opportunity would I have ever had of seeing all of that without joining the Marine Corps, you know. I was from a small town, small community, small population-wise state, and I joined a pretty elite small group of individuals in the Marine Corps, so I guess I like that being a part of something small, and I miss being a part of that, the crew and that community. But it can get you burned out pretty quick. You're always gone, so you just never really get to put down any roots anywhere, and that's part of the reason I got out.
And now the weather forecast for our listening area west of the Divide. There's a wind chill warning in effect until noon Wednesday for the West Glacier region, the Flathead Mission Valleys, Missoula Bitterroot Valleys, Bitterroot Sapphire Mountains, Butte Blackfoot region, and the Potomac Sealy Lake region. Tonight, mostly clear, lows 4 below to 11 below zero. Wednesday, mostly sunny, highs 9 to 16 degrees, lows 7 below to zero. Central Montana tonight, mostly cloudy in the evening with isolated snow flurries, lows 10 below to 15 below zero. Wednesday, sunny, highs 5 to 10 degrees, lows 5 below to 10 below zero. Southwest Montana tonight, partly cloudy, lows 10 below to 15 below zero. Wednesday, sunny, highs 5 to 10 degrees, lows 10 below zero to 0 degrees. And now, the editorial comments of Susan Hay Patrick.
This is my last commentary for Montana Public Radio. I know they need this time for news, but I'll miss being one of the public voices on Montana Public Radio. So, what's on my mind as I sing my radio swan song? The election is over, thank heavens. I'm moving on to focus on the upcoming legislative sessions, both in Helena and in D.C. I encourage my fellow nonprofit types to do the same. We have a great opportunity, especially at the state level, to make our voices heard, to try to shape public policy. Montana has one of the last citizen legislatures. We see our representatives at the hardware store, in local restaurants, at football games. They're our neighbors and often our friends. They need to know what's on our mind via testimony, education, and advocacy. Too often, nonprofits fear the legislative arena, convinced that all such efforts constitute lobbying and that the law prohibits nonprofits from lobbying. Not so. We actually have considerable leeway. There are rules and limits, but our voices are by no means stifled. Nonprofits can and should speak up in our capitals on issues that affect us and those we serve. Our voice is powerful. We employ 45,000 people throughout Montana, more than the finance, insurance, real estate, and arts sectors combined. We contribute over $1.5 billion annually to Montana's wage base, and we make visible, life-changing differences in our communities. That's good for everybody and for our economy. Unfortunately, due to crushing workloads, nonprofits tend to focus more on putting out fires than on preventing them through focused, coordinated, effective public policy work. This is in part because the vast majority of Montana's nonprofits, 81%, have budgets of less than $100,000. We are mostly underfunded, fragile, and volunteer-driven. So we tend to get involved in advocacy only when we face an immediate threat. Instead, we ought to take a big-picture view and work long-term to build relationships and become trusted, credible resources for legislators on both sides of the aisle. Not speaking up can give the impression that nonprofits are the sole solution to social problems, and we're only part of the solution. We are no substitute for a strong public sector. Yes, that's right. Our frequently scoffed at, regularly demonized government is also part of the solution to what ails us. In part because we haven't spoken up enough, human service nonprofits have been stretched far beyond our original mission to help the people who fall through the holes in the social safety net. We've become the net itself. And we were designed to complement a strong government safety net, not to be the net. But our funders and our boards won't like it if we speak up, I hear you cry. Well, if their goal includes using limited dollars to maximum effect to prevent and ease things like hunger, homelessness, and poverty, that goal leads inevitably to advocacy. We should reject advocacy only in favor of a principle more compelling than maximizing the amount of help provided to folks in trouble. It's hard to think what that principle might be. Advocacy can be frustrating. We don't always win. Sometimes it feels like we never win. But even when legislative efforts fail, by speaking out, we have prevailed because the interests of the people we help have been represented and debated in the public arena. In that regard, only silence can be considered failure. And now I'm fading into public radio silence. I'm Susan Hay Patrick, CEO of United Way of Missoula County. Thanks for listening.
Hi, I'm Eric Whitney, the news director here at Montana Public Radio. I'm here to explain why I made the difficult decision to discontinue commentaries on Montana Evening Edition. First, I want listeners to know that the mission of the news department is not changing. We're here to give people the information they need to understand what's happening in Montana. We're not going to reduce the diversity and opinions of voices heard on local news. To the contrary, my plan and promise is to actually put more voices and points of view on the air, including them in our news stories and interviews. I've been a public radio reporter for 21 years now. In recent years, there have been two disturbing trends in the news media: a drastic reduction in the amount of local news available, and an increase in one-sided opinion pieces across all forms of media. According to the Pew Research Journalism Project, in 2012 alone, the number of professional journalism jobs in the U.S. fell by more than 6%. Since 1989, nearly 20,000 newsroom jobs have been eliminated nationwide, many of them at local newspapers that have cut staff dramatically or simply shut their doors. At the same time, there are more venues than ever allowing people to express their opinions in the media. That's why I've decided to focus all of Montana Public Radio's news resources on reporting local news. There's not enough of it, the amount of quality local news continues to shrink, and we need to spend all of our time and money reporting local news. I recognize that there's been a long tradition of commentaries on this station, and that they are valuable content. But producing commentaries takes significant staff time and resources. Particularly time-intensive is ensuring editorial balance so that Montana Public Radio is not perceived as biased for or against any one particular point of view. My decision is that at this time, our limited newsroom resources are best allocated to finding and telling local news stories, hunting down the best sources across western Montana to reflect what Montanans are thinking, saying, and doing about the issues that matter to us all, and reporting them as news. Ending commentaries was not an easy decision, nor one I made lightly. Tonight, I'm making the promise to continue informing Montanans about the issues that are important to people here, to continue representing a broad spectrum of opinion in our news stories, to include the voices of as many different kinds of people in the many communities where our signal is heard, and to use all the tools I have to produce local news that matters. Thank you for continuing to listen to Montana Public Radio News. I hope listeners will give us an opportunity to prove ourselves and then get in touch and let us know how we're doing.
Susan Haypatrick is one of the many commentators on Montana Evening Edition, and their opinions don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can post it on our website at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Christopher Allen. Please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News. Thanks for listening.